The truth is out there. The truth is out there. I don't know if any of you are old enough to have watched The X-Files back in the 90s. The 90s, some of you are a lot older than that. If you've ever watched an episode of The X-Files, that's the slogan you see after the opening credits. The truth is out there. And it's a slogan and it's an idea which obviously connected with a lot of people. Because The X-Files was the longest running TV show during the 90s. And millions of people tuned in each week to join Agent Mulder and Agent Scully as they searched for the truth. There's a lot of people out there who want the truth. There's a lot of people out there who want to believe. But how can any of us really know the truth, really know the answers to the big questions in life? The big questions like, who am I? Why am I here? Is there a God? Can I know this God in some way? Well, you know, John's Gospel, a book written by John about Jesus. John is pretty straight with us about why he's written his Gospel. Because in chapter 20, John writes that these things are written that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. So John wants you to believe the truth about Jesus, and therefore John wants you to have life in Jesus. And here in chapter 8, we're kind of joining the action part of the way through a pretty heated argument. It's almost turned into a slanging match, to be honest. A pretty heated argument between the Jews and Jesus. And what is it that's at the heart of this argument? Well, it's the issue of truth. In verse 31, Jesus says, "If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. In other words, Jesus is saying that actually the truth is not out there, but the truth is here, in me, in his words, if you abide in my word. So Jesus is making big claims, and in this chapter, those big claims are up on the table for discussion. And the Jews who are speaking to Jesus here, the Jews have big questions. How can we know that you're telling the truth? How can we know for sure? How can we trust you, Jesus? So this is one man, Jesus, on his own, versus a whole crowd of well-educated, religious Jews who know their scriptures back to front, who know their truth, and yet, John, he's written this book. He's not afraid to include this debate in his book of belief. In fact, I think he's included this debate, this discussion, to give us now two more reasons to believe, two more reasons to believe, two more screws to help keep our faith in place, to help keep our faith in Jesus firm. What are those two reasons? Well, that's what we're going to look at this morning. Two reasons. And the first is a warning from the Jews and the way the Jews conduct themselves, what they say, what they think. A warning from the Jews. And that warning is that unbelief is a heart issue, not a head issue. Unbelief is a heart issue, not a head issue. And then secondly, we're going to see a command from Jesus. A command from Jesus that belief is a word issue and not a works issue. Belief is a word issue and not a works issue. So that's the two screws of belief which we'll be tightening this morning. But you know, the screwdriver, as it were, to keep that picture going, the screwdriver which fastens and turns those screws into place. In other words, the truth at the center of this heated debate is this. Jesus is God. Okay? That's the screwdriver. That's the center of this debate. Jesus is God. Jesus is the truth. You can totally trust Jesus' word. Why? Because Jesus is God. Don't miss that this morning. Jesus is God. So let's look at our first warning. Unbelief is a heart issue and not a head issue. To do that, I want to rewind a bit. Rewind a bit in John's Gospel. Rewind, in fact, right back to the beginning. These days you can skip on a DVD player, so just press that skip button right to the first chapter. In the first chapter of John's Gospel, in the first verse, John writes, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." So right from the start, in John's Gospel, there's the truth. Jesus is God himself. The Word, Jesus the Word, was with God, and Jesus the Word was God. Jesus is God himself. Chapter 1 goes on to say, "No one has ever seen God, but the only God who is at the Father's side, he has made him known." He has made him known. Jesus is God, and so Jesus makes God known to us. Jesus is the image of the invisible God. He's God in flesh, walking on this earth. So when we see Jesus, we see the Father. When we see Jesus, we see what God is like. Chapter 1 continues, "The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory. Glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ." Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. The Word, the one and only Son, Jesus, God, making God known to us. But grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. Jesus makes God's truth known to us. And so then, as we've already seen in this chapter, the spark which kind of ignites this argument, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So Jesus is God. Jesus makes God known. Jesus therefore makes God's truth known, and that truth will set us free. That truth will set us free. Now right through John's Gospel, you find people who see that. John the Baptist sees this. In chapter 3, John the Baptist says, "The one who comes from above is above all. The one who comes from heaven is above all." He's speaking about Jesus. "The one whom God has sent speaks the words of God." So John can see that this Jesus has brought God's truth. He is God's truth. The disciples see it. Perhaps a little bit clouded at times, but in chapter 6, Peter says, "We believe and know that you are the Holy One of God." We believe and know that you are the Holy One of God. So as you read through John's Gospel, Jesus' miracles, Jesus' teaching, Jesus' sinless life, as testified by his best friends, they're all like these giant flashing signposts which are pointing to this amazing truth. Jesus is God. And for those with their eyes open, those with hearts humble to receive that truth, that's where they arrive. They follow those signs. They get to that destination. Jesus speaks the words of God. Jesus is the Holy One of God. Jesus is God. But the scary thing here, the warning here, is that the Jews in chapter 8 don't see this. The Jews in chapter 8 don't see that Jesus is God. They don't recognize Jesus because they don't know his Father. These guys are clever. They know their scriptures. Their heads are fine, right? Their heads are fine, but their hearts are all dull and misted up, like when you breathe on a pane of glass and you can no longer see through it. Their hearts are blind and hardened against Jesus. And that's a warning, because it's possible to think that you know God. It's possible to say the right things, to spout the right prayers, to go to church, to have been baptized, to have taken communion, to study the Bible, to pray, to fast, to do all the right things, and yet not know God. And that's the Jews here in chapter 8. I guess the big question is that you here in Newport this morning? Is that you? You might be saying the right things. You might be reading the Bible, praying, fasting, doing all those things. But do you know God? It's important to ask that question. Do you know God? How can I know for sure that I know God? Well, if you know God, then you'll recognize Jesus. If you know God, you'll recognize Jesus. Why? Like father, like son, right? It's the family likeness. Like father, like son. The Jews here can't deal with Jesus. They don't recognize Jesus. They're asking all the questions. They seem to want to know. But Jesus himself says that they have no room in their hearts for his word, for what he's saying. These Jews say that they're looking for the Christ. They say that they want this rescuer from God, the anointed one, promised from thousands of years, hundreds of years ago. The king promised to sort out their problems. And yet, when it comes to Jesus, their hearts are settled. They've already made their minds up. They have no room for him. See, the fact is, Jesus doesn't kind of fit in their jigsaw puzzle. They've already put together a picture of what they imagine Jesus is going to be like. And when the real thing comes along, he doesn't fit. He's far greater. He's far more glorious than they'd imagined. And yet, because they've already constructed this idea, they're already standing firmly in what they were expecting. They've got no place for him. He doesn't fit their jigsaw puzzle. You see, right the way through John's gospel, the Jews have been like frantically firing these objections at Jesus as to why he cannot be God, the Christ, the one they expect. Jesus heals a paralyzed man. Jesus shows the power of God in healing a paralyzed man. But of course, he does it on the Sabbath. And so what do the Jews do? Like a flash, the Jews are in there. He can't be from God. He's breaking the Sabbath. He's more bothered about healing people than he is about keeping the law. They've made that place in the jigsaw, and Jesus doesn't fit it. Jesus spends 2 days in Samaria. Samaria, home of the filthy foreigners, the Samaritans. Jesus is there to bring the hope of God to those messed up lives. And yet here in verse 48, he can't be from God. He's a Samaritan. Are we not right in saying that you're a Samaritan? He's stayed in the houses of unclean people. He's actually spoken with them. He seems to actually care about them. This is an outrage. He can't be the Christ. Or think about the people in Jerusalem. As they start putting their faith in Jesus, they're amazed at his miracles. They're amazed at his healings. They listen to his teachings and they say, no one has ever taught us like this man. Even the soldiers sent to arrest him are amazed. And yet, like a flash, those critical, cynical Jews are there. This man is a threat. Send the guards, arrest him. Get him out of our sight. The Jews don't see the signs. The Jews don't hear the words of God from the mouth of Jesus. And so verse 47 is Jesus' crushing judgment for them. Whoever is of God hears the words of God. The reason why you do not hear them is that you are not of God. The reason you do not hear the words of God is that you do not belong to God. They don't recognize the Son because they've never met the Father. They don't welcome the Son because they've never loved his Father. You see, it's not a head issue, it's a heart issue. Now, I imagine most of you here would not see yourselves in the same box as these Jews. Because you're saying, of course I believe in Jesus. But I just want to speak to some of you here who might not have trusted in Jesus. And you might still have questions about who Jesus is and about whether he really is who he says he is, whether he really lived, whether he really died, whether he really rose. And I want to say to you, there's nothing wrong with asking solid questions of Jesus. Because Jesus makes big claims with big eternal consequences to those claims. And so it would be stupid for you to just blindly believe. Real faith is built on the real person of Jesus, who really lived, who really died, who really rose from the dead. Jesus' claims, in other words, are anchored in history, in reality. Real faith asks questions. That's how we grow. It's when you stop asking questions that you've got to ask the question, is there really a spiritual pulse in your life? Because if you want to know God more, you're going to be asking questions of Him. But I get the sense when I'm talking to some people that that stream of questions could just go on forever. And the conversation's kind of hopping around like a pogo stick, you know? Hasn't the Bible been changed? Isn't religion the reason there's all these wars? What about evolution? Why does God allow suffering? It's like a pogo stick going here, there and everywhere. And I don't know if you've ever had those kind of conversations. I don't know if that's you here this morning. You're just asking those questions all over the place. And for those people, questions aren't the pathways to answers. Those questions are more like bricks in the wall, like we were talking about earlier. Bricks in a wall which they are building up to avoid facing the truth. The problem is not that they can't figure out the gospel with their head. The problem is that they don't want to believe with their heart. Their heart is closed. And maybe that's you this morning. Maybe your heart is closed. And that's how it is for the Jews here. I mean, by this point in the argument, the Jews are just getting ridiculous. Their questions don't even make sense. Like verse 48, are we not right in saying that you're a Samaritan and have a demon? That's not even a sensible question. Where does that come from? They're just building a wall. They're keeping Jesus at arm's length. And you see, with people like that, and maybe this is true for you, when Jesus finally serves up the truth, it just reveals where your heart is at. When Jesus finally serves up the truth in verse 58, when he finally says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am," shows where they're at. Jesus says, before Abraham was, I am. I am. And Jesus is using God's revealed name from the Old Testament. When God said to Moses, "I am who I am," Moses said, "Who shall I say sent me?" And God says, "Tell them, I am sent, has sent you. I am who I am." That's God's name, the Lord's name. And so when Jesus kind of straps this verse onto himself, speaks these words, "Before Abraham was, I am," he's saying nothing less than Jesus is God. And at that point, rather than worshipping him, as they should, the Jews just pick up stones to kill him. In verse 59. That's their heart right there. They don't believe. And more than that, they don't want to believe, okay? So are you afraid of the truth this morning? Would you be happy to say that Jesus is God? Jesus is your God, as Thomas said, "My Lord and my God." Or are you afraid of getting too close in case your true heart is revealed? Yeah, you might be here at church Sunday morning. That might be a habit for you. That might be a tradition for you, But then it's only one day a week, isn't it? It's only a Sunday morning, a Sunday evening. Does God get your Mondays? Does God get your Tuesdays? Does God get your Wednesdays? Does God get your whole life? Have you given God your heart? It's okay to ask questions, like we said, but are you holding on to those questions because they give you a safe distance from the life-changing, life-demanding truth of Jesus? As long as you've got those questions to hide behind, you won't have to face who Jesus really is and who Jesus really wants you to be. Some of you might recognize yourselves in the Jews this morning. So if that's you, Take the warning. Don't be like them. Believe in Jesus. Make room for his word. Be willing to say, whatever you say, Jesus, I will do it. Whatever you say, I will believe it. Open your heart to him. Give your heart and your life and your Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays to him. Ask God to make his truth real to you through Jesus. Some of you here might recognize your friends in the Jews. You might have had those frustrating pogo stick conversations here, there and everywhere. You know, perhaps it's time that you challenge them, those friends. Perhaps it's time you expose their hearts. Ask them directly what they really think of Jesus as God. You know, a couple of, myself and a friend, we started going out to speak to some teenagers who hang out at the recreation ground near where I live. Literally hundreds of them on a Friday night. You can guess what they get up to. White lightning from the corner shop. And then they're down there to drink away their sorrows. But I was talking to a girl there Friday evening, and it was one of those pogo stick conversations. What about suffering? What about other religions? And she would give me 20 seconds to speak before she'd jump in with another question. She didn't care what my answer was. So after a minute of this, I just said, look, we've had a minute of you talking to me and me talking to you, and you've asked me 3 questions. You haven't listened to my answers. Let me tell you the truth. You fall short of God's glory. You're a sinner, and you need to trust in Jesus, who is God, who alone can save you. And sometimes with our friends, there's a time for being gentle, just as Jesus was gentle with some people. But sometimes the most loving thing to do is to knock down the wall they're hiding behind. It's to show them the unavoidable truth. The truth which exposes their sins, and yet the truth which holds out hope. Jesus is God. He's not just a man. He's not just a good teacher. He cannot just be ignored. He is alive now, and he calls them to turn to him, to accept his word. Perhaps that's a conversation you should really pray to have this week with your neighbor, with your friend, with your relative, whoever it is who's bouncing away from God. Unbelief is a heart issue, not a head issue. But moving on to the second point. What exactly is it here that's wrong with the Jews' hearts? What is actually holding them back? Well, this second point, this command of Jesus. Belief is a word issue, not a works issue. Verse 51. Jesus says, truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death. Jesus is God, so Jesus' word is true. What Jesus says goes, in other words. So true belief is believing the truth, right? True belief is believing the truth. Taking Jesus at his word. Taking Jesus at his word. And the Jews didn't want to believe Jesus' word here because it would have meant letting go of something else they valued more highly. Letting go of their works, their status as Jews, their good deeds, their position. And you know, they brought all these things to Jesus. All these things which they thought put them in the right with God. All these kind of empty cardboard boxes which they just stacked up in a pile so that they could sit on top and just say, I'm okay, Jesus, I don't need your help. I'm religious, I'm a descendant of Abraham. Abraham's my father, I'm a chosen child of God. And let me tell you, God's pretty chuffed to have me on his team. What offends these Jews the most about Jesus is the fact that he takes their job. They're trying to save themselves. They're resting on a false foundation. And Jesus says, in effect, I'm here to save you. Without me, you're stuffed. It's interesting. But again, the people in John's Gospel who welcome Jesus with all his tough claims are the losers, the outcasts, the rejects. Think of the Samaritan woman. back in chapter 4. She's just been ditched by husband number 5, the paralyzed man who's been waiting 38 years to get healed, the fishermen who are desperate for hope. None of them are shouting, "Look at me, God. Look at all the great things that I've done." No, those people are hungry. They're thirsty for Jesus' words of life. They can't get enough of Jesus. But these Jews have just got their fingers in their ears. "You're demon-possessed. I don't need a saviour. I've got Abraham as my father. I've got Moses. I've got my good deeds. I've got my works. Are you saying you're better than Abraham, Jesus?" That's what they say to him. And how does Jesus reply? Well, he basically says, "Look at me, look at God. We're one, like Father, like Son." Verse 49. "I do not have a demon, but I honour my Father." Verse 54. "It is my Father who glorifies me." Verse 55. "I know him. You have not known him, I know him. I know him and I keep his word." Stop looking around you. Stop looking at yourselves and start looking at God. That's what Jesus is saying to them. Now, you know, when my sister passed her driving test, the first thing she said when she walked through the door was, "I can drive." And I just said, "You might be able to drive, but you're not going to drive me." You know, it's not that she's a bad driver. It's just that she's not a good one. But you know, we can be like that with Jesus, can't we? "Sure, Jesus, you've passed the test. You can drive. You've got the authority. Your word is true. But I'm at the wheel at the moment. I'm in control of my life. Sure, Jesus, you're God. You died to save me from all my sins. But if it's no problem with you, I'm just going to keep my own hands on the wheel. Thanks all the same." We've got to stop being like these Jews. When it comes to being alongside us, when it comes to appreciating what it's like to be tempted, it's great to know that Jesus is fully human. But when it comes to dealing with our sin, when it comes to the way we keep messing up our lives, no one else but Jesus, the God-man, will do. Fully God, fully able to sort out our sin. We can't do that. No sinful human can do that. No sinful human can sort out our destiny with death. Only Jesus, 100% human, 100% God, can sort out the death problem. Abraham couldn't do it. Moses couldn't do it. As Jesus says, they were looking forward to him. Because only Jesus brings that answer to sin and death, which lies at the root of all the problems in this world. Only Jesus, because only Jesus is God. So do you believe that? When Jesus says in verse 51, "If anyone keeps my word, he will never see death." Do you actually believe that here this morning? Do you believe that Jesus can keep you from not the physical death of your body, but keep you from that permanent, painful, lonely separation from God? That final cutoff from his goodness forever. Do you believe that Jesus can keep you from hell? No matter how old you get, it's easy to think, isn't it? It's easy to think that death is just something that happens to other people. Some of you here in this building might not be more than a few months away from death. Where's your security? Where's your trust? Are you just holding on to cardboard boxes like your years of church attendance, like the fact that you prayed that prayer 20 years ago, but there's been no fruit in your life? Are you hoping that God will stack up a few more brownie points for you earlier because you put a few coins in the offering earlier on? It won't save you. Only Jesus, 100% human, 100% God, will save you and can save you. Do you believe that? Have you put your trust in him this morning? And if you have, and if you're a Christian here, and you'd stand up and say, "Yes, Jesus has saved me and forgiven me," then the question is yours. Does Jesus have the driving seat in your life? Verse 51 is a two-sided promise, isn't it? If anyone keeps my word, he will never see death. Jesus will save you from death if you keep his word. Belief is a word issue and not just a works issue. So I knew my sister could drive. She proved it. She passed that test. But I wasn't going to let her drive me. Don't be like that with Jesus. It's no good having Jesus as God in the passenger seat. That's not true belief. That's not true faith. Take his promises and shape your life around them. Take his commands and shape your life by them. No one is better qualified to drive the car of your life. If you've never listened to Jesus, it's time to listen. It's time to let him take charge of your life. Let him change your life. He's God. How dare you refuse him? And yet, he's God. Why would you want to refuse him? Maybe Jesus has been behind the steering wheel of your life for years now. You've seen what a great friend Jesus is. You've seen what a comforter he is. You've seen his love. Well, if Jesus' voice is a welcome sound to your heart, then you can rest in Jesus' promise. You can rest in Jesus' promise that you're safe with him driving your life. Take his promises, build your life around them. There's always that temptation to be a passenger seat driver still, isn't there? Like my wife. Good thing she's not here this morning. To be a passenger seat driver, to be barking out the directions. Turn left at the roundabout. You turn left. Oh no, sorry, I didn't mean left. Go back the other way. Do a U-turn. There's always that temptation to think that you could drive better, isn't there? There's that impatience, perhaps, when you don't see your prayers answered. There's that frustration as you look around and see the mess of this sinful world. There's that roadside hot dog stall of sin, which still seems so tempting to you, right? Even though you know that with Jesus at the wheel, he wants to drive on straight by and not stop. But Jesus is God, and that's the one truth which keeps everything in its right place. He's God, so he doesn't lie. He's God, so he never breaks a promise. It's worth waiting for him. It's worth being patient. His timing is perfect. It's worth trusting in him. He's promised to sort out this messed up world. It's worth fighting every little sin. Because only Jesus has the truth that will set you free. Keep his word. Take his word on board, and you will know life because you'll know Jesus. Let's pray together.